Welcome to Whiskey Cask, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 122 for December 9th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes...
People are scared to mix whiskey into cocktails because it's not a natural thing that people think of. They think of other spirits first, but whiskey's actually extremely versatile.
That's Toronto bartender Shona Jensen, who won the Bar Chefs competition at the recent Whiskey Live Toronto. With the holidays coming up, you may want to introduce your friends to whiskey, but it may take a cocktail to get them interested. We'll talk about whiskey-based cocktails in a few minutes. But first, let's look at the news. If you're in the UK and someone offers to sell you a case of Beaumont out of the back of a truck, call the police in Hertfordshire. That's because an entire truckload of Beaumont bound for UK retailers was stolen this past Tuesday. Beaumont's Glenn Moore says the truck was carrying 10,000 bottles of Beaumont, ranging from 12 to 25 years old, and valued at £300,000, or about $600,000.
Hertfordshire police are investigating the incident as we speak, but it's very disappointing because that whiskey was destined for the UK Christmas market.
What are you doing to try to make up the difference, or at least to keep the supplies up?
Well, one thing we have to remember is, unlike other spirits, we can't distill Beaumont tomorrow and bottle the following day. So it will take 25 years to replace some of that stock. However, what we are doing is working flat out just now to bottle some replacement stock from our maturing casks. So people within the UK will certainly have Beaumont on their shelves to enjoy this Christmas.
I have to ask, did it look like the thieves knew what they were doing with this? Was the truck marked or anything, and they knew what they were going after?
Yes, I think it was fairly well organized. They had a forklift and a truck waiting to transport the whiskey away, so I think it was fairly well organized.
And it was an independent trucker. It wasn't a Beaumont truck, right?
No, it was an independent trucker.
Well, let's hope that they find it.
I hope so. We take a lot of pride in packing and a long time to produce the Beaumont single malt whiskey, so it's disappointing when somebody steals it.
This ever happened to you guys before?
This is the first time anything like this has happened. I think it does highlight, however, you know, the value that people place now on single malt whiskey. And we've seen that with sales around the world. The interest in single malt whiskey just seems to grow and grow.
While no reward has officially been announced, I suspect Beaumont would be very happy if someone has information that could help Hertfordshire police track down the thieves. This past week marked the anniversary of a glorious day in American history. Thursday, December 5th, was the 74th anniversary of the enactment of the 21st Amendment to the Constitution in 1933. Of course, that's the amendment that ended what some called the Grand Experiment, and most Americans called the 13-year-long national nightmare of Prohibition. Next December 5th will be the 75th anniversary, and Dewar's Scotch has already started a year of events to celebrate the anniversary. Ned Duggan of Dewar's explains.
Dewar's has a pretty unique place in the repeal of Prohibition. We were one of the first legal imported spirits to make it back to the marketplace after the 13-year Prohibition. So this is really a special time for our brand. As one of the first back, it really helped us get a kickstart in the market, and then as a result, we ended up being one of the top blended Scotch whiskey in the U.S. So it's really kind of like a rebirth of our brand in the U.S.
What are you doing to mark the anniversary?
Oh wow, we had a big day on December 5th. We actually started our festivities a little bit early. We had a national ad campaign that started in early November, multimedia with TV, print, radio, and also a big digital movement as well, just getting awareness out about the brand and about Repeal Day. And then leading up to the event, we also hired a fleet of cars, of vintage cars, to travel around the streets of New York wrapped in Repeal Day and Dewar's messaging. We had huge special events in the major markets around the country on December 5th, Prohibition-themed parties, and then also countless bar promotions all across the country. So we really went all out this year for Dewar's.
What are you going to do over the next year?
Over the next year, we're going to continue to build towards the 75th anniversary proper, which is December 5th of next year. So we're going to be, getting repeal day messaging out, getting people excited about the 75th year, and then having a big blowout celebration on that day.
There's even a website at repealday.com. You'll find a link at the WhiskeyCast website. And sticking with Dewars for just a second, Managing Director Gary Gray has been named chairman of the Scotch Whisky Experience in Edinburgh. It's one of the most popular tourist attractions in Edinburgh and is undergoing a long-term modernization project. The first spirits auction in New York since Prohibition brought in more than $300,000 Saturday at Christie's. A single bottle of the Macallan, distilled in 1926 and aged for 60 years in sherry casks, sold for $54,000 to a private collector. That makes it one of the most expensive whiskeys ever sold at auction. Another anonymous bidder walked away with an extensive and instant whisky collection. Richard Brierley is the wine and spirits director at Christie's and brought the hammer down at $102,000 for a 729-bottle collection of Scotch whiskies.
Everything from three-year-old and from blended all the way up to very rare, now distinct distillery bottlings of 28, 30 years old.
And this came from a collector in the Northwest, right?
Exactly, who couldn't bear to part with individual ones and wanted us to try and find a buyer or more for all 729 bottles. So they stayed together and they became an instant collection.
I have to ask, because there is a bit of controversy about the 1856. Sure. I know it's been pulled from the auction.
Yeah.
What happened specifically with this bottle? Because I know there's been some discussions between Christie's and the Macallan over the last couple of months.
Sure. I think that it came from what we thought was a reputable source. The collector had bought it indeed from the Macallan. And we consider that to be great provenance and the best provenance. And only really after the cataloging was complete did we begin to understand with Macallan the full story and understand the work that they had done with carbon 14 dating, in particular the 19th century Macallans. And we were sad to learn too late, really, but happy that we were able to learn before the sale and withdraw it from sale.
And it's actually in the catalog, which may provide some guidance to future collectors about pictures of this specific bottle.
Right, and in talking with Macallan, it seems that our bottle has great similarity to the ones that are in their library now, and that the carbon 14 dating and the knowledge of that hopefully will spread a little bit more as more and more collectors understand and that these things are being fabricated.
Tell me about that, because it's not just the Macallan, it's other wines that we've had problems with over the years, other spirits. How can one tell the actual provenance of a wine or a spirit?
Well, it's very difficult, and without opening the bottle, and in this particular instance, without opening the bottle and testing it, we would never have known, and indeed the distillery would never have known. It's a great challenge for us, and we do everything we can with labels, with types of glass, with corks for wine, for capsules and so on and so forth, that they are as they were in the period in which they were bottled. What makes it much more complicated is when genuine bottles and genuine corks are filled with spurious things, or when bottles that have been recorked or reconditioned by a distillery or a winery come onto market, because then you break the chain of provenance somewhat. So it's a great challenge, one which we continually upgrade our efforts on, and things do come onto market that have dubious provenance, and we don't knowingly sell things that we think may be not right or incorrect or counterfeit, and that's why we pulled the Macallan bottle this last week.
And, in fact, I know that in some cases scientists have gone so far as to take a syringe, puncture the cork slightly, pull a small sample out, and do serious chemical testing, correct?
Yeah, that's what's happened with the Macallan 19th century bottlings, and they have been to Oxford University in England to be carbon 14 dated, and that's a several hundred pound commitment to each bottle, and not something that we could have done without the owner's consent, but something that the Macallan did because they bought a significant quantity of 19th century stock. But it's getting trickier and trickier to keep these things off the market, but I think the amount that comes onto the auction market is a drop in the ocean to what is traded privately, and we try to think that we're a very strong gatekeeper to keeping these spurious collectibles off the market.
Well, on a happier note, this must be an interesting experience for you because I know you've been a wine specialist for years.
Right.
What's your experience with spirits?
I think probably like with wine, it's a passion, and we've been challenged over the last few months to make it into something that we treat commercially, and that's a great challenge. And Justin and I have tried to drink our way through as much scotch as we can without killing ourselves. No, but we've been trying to learn, understand the marketplace, understand the pricing and the desirability of rare scotches and rare whiskies and cognacs and so on. And we have some experience with cognac, particularly through our London sale rooms. But this has been a learning experience and one which we've enjoyed.
Brierley and his assistant, Justin Christoph, spent months getting ready for this auction.
Do you now know more about whiskey than you ever thought you'd know?
Yes, but I'm still learning. And whiskey is a lot like wine. The more you know, the more you know you don't know. And that's part of the fun of it. There's always something new, and there's always a new expression or a new bottling coming out, and a new discovery. And that's what makes it rewarding at the end of the day.
Back to that 1856 Macallan for a second. Justin says it's being returned to the consignor.
We don't know. It's definitely fake, but we know it's probably not real. So when it's something's in that gray area, it's safer to pour it. The tests have been done on similar bottles to this bottle, but no tests have been done on this exact bottle. That particular 1856 was bought by Macallan on the open market to add to their 19th century collection, and they sold three of the 1856s to their private buyers of their Fine and Rare Club. And so that bottle was actually sold to our consignor by Macallan.
I asked the Macallan late this past week for an explanation on how these three bottles made it into the marketplace, despite the questionable provenance, but have not received a response yet. I'll update this story with the Macallan's response on an upcoming episode. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. McTeers in Glasgow has an auction of rare whiskies and wines scheduled for December 13th. Rhiannon Walsh's Celtic Malts is kicking off the first Celtic Malts Whiskey School on January 17th at St. Peter's Inn near Philadelphia. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's Swiss chapter will hold a Burns Supper with Robin Lang in Schoenwerd on January 19th. Tickets are still available for the Victoria Whiskey Festival in Victoria, British Columbia on January 26th and 27th. And Whiskey Live Tokyo is scheduled for February 10th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com. I have to admit, I'm not much for cocktails, mostly because I don't know much about making them, and I prefer my whiskeys with just a bit of water. Nothing wrong with cocktails, though, especially if you're trying to introduce your friends to whiskey during the holidays. In fact, whiskey can be one of the most versatile spirits for making cocktails, according to veteran mixologist Bobby Gleason.
When you look back in history, our first cocktails, most of our cocktails were made with the brown spirits, and the whiskey is one of the more popular cocktails back in during the day.
How hard is it to make a good whiskey cocktail these days?
It's when you know the basics, it's not that hard. It really isn't. When you look at some of the classic bourbon cocktails, and when we talk about the first great American whiskey cocktail, was really the julep. Came around in 1806. There was an Englishman that was traveling through Virginia, and he wrote back, he said that the julep is a cocktail that Virginians were wont to drink in the morning. And I thought, wow, 2 ounces of bourbon in the morning for breakfast, those are pretty hearty people.
And it's going on from there, right?
It still has. And right now, especially during the fall months, people's mindset starts to turn towards the brown spirits again. And they look for that warmth and that embracement that they get from those brown spirits. And with bourbon, you know, being the true American spirit, you know, it's something that a lot of mixologists are looking for and are starting to rediscover again, if you will.
Now, you mentioned the basics. When someone knows the basics, what are the basics?
Well, some of, I think one of the greatest classic bourbon cocktails, the Old Fashioned. And it was designed for Colonel Pepper at the Pudendus Club in the late 1800s. And I truly believe that he probably came into the club and asked for his bourbon cocktail in the old-fashioned way. And that's when they muddled the orange with the bitters and did all that. And I think once you learn that, it came from the smashes and, you know, just simply smashing the fruit with the cherry and the bitters to make an old-fashioned. An old-fashioned is still a great cocktail today.
What's the recipe for your old-fashioned?
You want 2 dashes of bitters with a sugar cube, a wedge of orange, and a stemless cherry. You want to take your maraschino cherry and pull the stem off because we don't really want to chew on a tree, which is what the stem is. You muddle that to release the oils and to take that juice, extract the juice from the orange to dissolve the sugar and the cherry. And then you want to add your ice, a cracked ice, and then your bourbon of your choice. Stir that, about 2 ounces of bourbon, and then a splash of soda.
Are there drinks or anything that mixes that doesn't mix well with bourbon that somebody ought to stay away from?
If you like it, you know, whatever you mix together and you like it, that's a great... Well, that's a pretty tough question. I don't know of anything that you may want to stay away from. You know, it's very versatile, and it really brings some character and backbone to a cocktail. Some things that we can look to that are kind of outside the box thinking. Think about orange marmalade. Think about apricot marmalade. I think orange and apricot really, really blend well with the bourbon. And I also love guava. It's very good with bourbon. Pineapple juice goes great with bourbon. I can't think of anything that just doesn't go with bourbon.
For more of that outside-the-box thinking, let's turn to Shona Jensen. She's a mixologist at Key Modern Japanese and Bar in Toronto and won the Bar Chefs competition at Whiskey Live Toronto in October with this drink.
It's called the Canadian Tropical Winter, and it's Canadian Club, Goldschlager, pineapple juice, a spritz of fresh lime, and a little bit of fresh cinnamon. Shake it up, put it on some ice. You've got a drink.
I got to try this.
Okay, I'll pour you one right now.
Okay.
Give it a try. Enjoy.
First one.
Now, I'm not one for cocktails normally, but that's good. I get the orange in it, and yet I still get a little bit of the whiskey taste. It's very subtle.
Good. I'm glad. That's good. It'd be good for anybody. You can have it hot or cold, and it's good for a beginning whiskey drinker, too, because there's some mix in it to ease the blow.
What's the key to a good whiskey cocktail?
Just love it, drink it, enjoy it, and sip it slowly and have good friends company while you're enjoying it.
And that's really the key, enjoying whiskey with friends, no matter how you like your drink. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast, and next time around we'll get a unique perspective on whiskeys from Scotland and Japan, from a man who's worked at distilleries in both countries. Hiroyoshi Miyamoto is known in Scotland as Mike Miyamoto. He worked at Morrison Bowmore's operations there on assignment from Suntory, and he's back in Japan now as manager of Suntory's flagship Yamazaki distillery.
We learned a lot from Scotland, but to be honest with you, last 30 years or so, we passed, you know, the level of complexity in terms of whiskey production. So I shouldn't say this, but you know, there are very few things to learn from Scotland and these days.
And if that doesn't get you to listen to more of Mike Miyamoto on the next episode of Whiskey Cast, I don't know what will. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com, and I'd love to hear from you. Check the Whiskey Cast website for links to the stories in this episode, along with the calendar of events, a complete archive of past episodes, and the Whiskey Cast store. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.